The call to post means it's time for Off to the Races on the Racing Biz Radio Network. We're talking thoroughbred racing and breeding from Virginia, around the Mid-Atlantic, and across the country. Off to the Races is powered by the Racing Biz, the independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. Find them at www.theracingbiz.com. Now here's your host with Off to the Races on the Racing Biz Radio Network. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Off to the Races Conversations, a continuation of our radio show, which ended October 3rd, where we get the chance to spend a little more time with our guests and dig a little more deeply into the issues and stories that they want to tell. My name is Frank Vespi, and on today's show, we're going to have Michael Algio. Michael, the former chairman of the Maryland Racing Commission, he stepped down as chairman following the most recent commission meeting in late September. This was his last Preakness as chairman, though he will remain on the Maryland Racing Commission. We'll be talking with him about some of what's transpired in the 4 years that he was chairman of the commission, joined the commission in 2016, and oversaw, well, a number of things, and we'll get a chance to talk with him about what some of those are. Off to the Races Conversations, powered by the Racing Biz. Check us out, theracingbiz.com. You can also find us on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Flickr. We are at the Racing Biz and always looking to connect with folks on social media. And don't forget to grab our free mobile app for your Android and Apple devices. Now let's turn to our conversation with Michael Algio. Michael Algio joining me here on Off to the Races Conversations. And Michael, former Maryland Racing Commission chairman, thanks for taking a little bit of time to chat with me today.
Frank, as always, it's a pleasure.
Well, thank you. Let me start with this. You came to the Maryland Racing Commission. You were sort of an out of left field pick for a lot of people in the industry. We're not part of the industry, not especially versed in the industry. I'm curious, give me two things that have surprised you in your role as commission chairman, and one sort of a good surprise and one maybe a challenge for the industry.
I will share with you the good surprise is, and this is from day one, it's just a cool industry. I mean, the history, the traditions, are just, legendary. I mean, they really are. And so to become, and I was aware of that, obviously, before I became chairman. I mean, I was an attendee at the Preakness before, but certainly not a horse racing enthusiast by any stretch of the imagination. But Sal Sinatra, I think, described it when I first started. He goes, you had the eyes, you looked like a kid in the candy store at Christmas time. It was that kind of experience for me because it was all brand new. But then flowing from that, Frank, was just the number of outstanding, good people in the industry that have the future of the industry at heart. They want good things to happen, and that's on both sides, on the thoroughbred side, on the standardbred side. I love going to the live meetings before this pandemic hit because it was an opportunity to talk to people, to chat. I can't tell you how receptive. I mean, they may have realized I came from left field and like, who is this Algio guy? But I will tell you, everyone was very welcoming, members of the commission. And the beauty of it, one of the things I've learned in life, whether it's in education or in the law or in the horse industry, is that continuity and consistency can be a good thing. And that's one of the reasons why I'm happy to stay on the commission, and that we have the members on the commission that have been there. We've worked together. We know what's happening. And that type of experience and background is going to be really helpful. But so the first thing to answer your question directly is just all of the fine, fine people in the industry. And so for me, that was a true blessing. The other part, and I knew that was happening. My first meeting with John McDaniel, who again was just very gracious, called me, congratulated me, set up a lunch, went, and you and I have had this conversation before, but he just went down a list of things. And his message to me was, Michael, it's really important to understand the hydraulics of the industry. There's so many moving parts. And his motto was attempting to keep peace in the valley. Well, I found out how difficult that can be. And I have described it before as playing whack-a-mole. And there's always a crisis. If there's not a crisis, there's a conspiracy. Whether it's real or whether it's made up by QAnon, there's a conspiracy. Somebody is thinking that somebody's happening and they're not aware of it. So dealing with the problems that were real were challenging. Dealing with the problems that were non-existent were challenging. And the types of family squabbles that we have in the industry between the various groups, whether it's the MTHA against the breeders or whether it's thoroughbred against the standardbred, there's always those battles, and someone thinks that somebody is getting a leg up, has an advantage coming down the stretch, if you will. So dealing with those, I have found to be very challenging.
John McDaniel, the former Racing Commission chair, a longtime member of the commission, also a breeder and owner here in Maryland. That's who you were referring to there a minute ago. And it is interesting what you say. I remember when I was first getting involved, and this is going back even before slot machines and stuff, and people would say, well, what's going on in the industry? And you'd say, well, see, the horsemen and the breeders, they don't like each other. Nobody likes the racetrack. The racetrack doesn't – and people would look at you like you're from another planet, like it's this tiny little industry. Right, right. Why does everybody hate each other? But and I think some of it – I'm curious as to whether you would agree with this. To me, some of it is you've got all these people – it's a small industry, so everybody knows everybody. And you've got all these people who were either born into it or have been in it basically their whole lives. And – nobody ever forgets anything. So I remember the first. Go ahead.
Nobody forgets anything, and everybody's an expert. you know, everybody thinks it should be done their way, and I have found that out. And you know, the great irony is that, and I've said this to many groups, is that, you know, I hear, you know, when the gavel clicks and we say the meeting adjourned from the commission meeting and we'll meet again next month on this date at this time. In between that, I hear all kinds of you know, whispering and all kinds of complaints. This is going on, this is going on, this is going on. And then I come to the next commission meeting, crickets. You don't hear anything. Nobody that raised those issues, nobody's there. Nobody shows up. It is it's the same gang. You know that. I mean, I could list the names. And I'm like, you know, if it's that important, show up. Show up. Yeah. Let's, you know, I've said that all along when we got into that, when the Baltimore Sun decided to put us, the commission, our commission, in their crosshairs. And we were criticized for what I believe was nothing more than political coverage for the battle going on between Baltimore City and Stronach. You know, it's nobody. I said, if you have a complaint, come to us, air it out, and we'll see if we can address it. But it's ironic and kind of sad. Nobody wants to do that publicly. They're very quick to talk to somebody else privately. And sometimes we can get things achieved that way too, but it can be frustrating when there's all this acrimony and vitriol going on behind the scenes, and then you try to address it, and folks don't show up at the commission meeting. The great irony with this pandemic, my friend, is that because we've had to go virtual, we've had more people at these monthly racing commission meetings than we've ever had. I look at the numbers on the screen, and it was like that one meeting before Laurel got reopened, like 138 people on that meeting. You know,
yeah, I don't think it's been a long time since we saw 138 in person. Go ahead.
Yeah. And everybody wants to say something and they can't.
So then they want to talk, not when they're actually at the meeting.
Then they want to talk, yeah.
It is, as we are reminding ourselves these days all the time, with an election coming up, it's a participatory system, and you need to get involved and say your piece if you got something to say.
If you want to evoke change, you got to show up.
Yep. Yeah. So let me ask you this. I mean, one of the things that has been interesting, I've been around the industry now through a number of different commission chairmen, and I'm curious as to, I think each of them, and some might have expressed it this way and some might not, but each of them I think approach the job with their own sort of philosophy as to what the commission is and what it should do and what it should stand for. And I'm curious as to what your sense of that is, what role you think the commission should play, and sort of what you were trying to enact as chairman.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. When I got appointed chairman, I've had a number of people come up and say, oh, wow, you're chairman of the Racing Commission. That's a very, very important position. That's an extremely powerful position. I was honored to be chairman of the Racing Commission, but I never, and I say this sincerely, I never saw it as a powerful position. If you look at the statute, we're a regulatory commission. We are an oversight commission. We make certain that statutes and regulations and policies are complied with. That's our job. And if they don't, if there's a violation, then we address it in whatever fashion that may be. If it's on the track, the stewards address it. We have the appellate process, or, threatening to pull somebody's license. The greater authority obviously came in the approval and the review and the approval of the RFRA request. And again, that was something that, when I first came there, I met with Executive Director Mike Hopkins. And I met with our legal counsel, Eric London, and we went over all of the things that needed to be addressed. And I said, how is this typically done? So they went through the entire RFRA process. And so the policies that we implemented, policies that have been time-honored from one commission to the next, we hadn't done anything different than any other commission had done. And then it became, again, the great conspiracy that we were aligned with Stronach in a conspiracy to close Pimlico and move the Preakness to Laurel. That great conspiracy floated throughout too long of a period of my time as chairman. And that was just, nothing could be further from the truth. I like to say I didn't have a horse in the race. But at the same time, I majored in history, and this tremendous history at Pimlico. And if we can keep it, and there was a good reason to keep it, then we tried everything to do that. To answer your question more succinctly, I saw my role as being one member of a commission whose role was to regulate and to oversee. And I said this before at a commission meeting, to do no harm. And we got into that struggle with Stronach on the Lasix issue. And, we needed to modify that statute in order for us to comply with the regulation and to achieve what, thank goodness, they had reached that agreement between TSG and the MTHA on the Lasix, the two-year-olds, because otherwise it would have it had the potential to be uglier than it was. So I'm glad we worked that out. And that was a close vote, very close vote. So I don't my role is one of overseeing the commission. I'm one member of nine. Everybody has the same voice as I have.
Talking with Michael Algio, outgoing chairman of the Maryland Racing Commission, here today on Off to the Races. And Michael, as you look back on your tenure as chairman, what do you point to as, these are the things we got done that I'm really happy with?
Well, first of all, it is just I got to tell you, it's exciting to have been chairman of the Maryland Racing Commission when we had a Triple Crown winner. Justify. I have a picture in my office of me with that incredible horse. And, I mean, that was that race that day at the Preakness, the second jewel, second to none, was just, you want to talk about magical. It was magical. So magical that then I went out to Laurel in June for the Belmont when Justify won the Triple Crown. So to be chairman, not that I had anything to do with that, but just to be chairman was really cool to have a Triple Crown winner, much like John was when I think when the American Pharaoh won as well. But notwithstanding that, obviously the biggest success, and again, it didn't have much to do with me or the Racing Commission, but because you're chairman, it certainly implicates us, was the Racing and Community Development Act of 2020. Pimlico has, again, great tradition. The Preakness belongs to Pimlico. People have described that as a Triple Crown winner legislation. It was a win for the city of Baltimore. It was a win for Stronach. It was a win for the horsemen. It's a win for the state of Maryland. And I am just, there's a lot of work yet to be done. And there are the naysayers out there who just, you know, just ranted and raved about this is horrible what they're doing to Pimlico. Well, there was no way that the state was going to spend what would have been, and I can assure you this is probably a conservative estimate, $800 million to rebuild the existing Pimlico from tax money. That was never going to happen. That was never going to happen. And as a result of good minds sitting down, Bill Cole from the city of Baltimore deserves a lot of credit. Certainly Alan Rifkin, Alan Foreman, Anthony Magnanaro, all of these folks were incredibly involved in getting that agreement done. Now we're talking about $389 million in bonds through the Maryland Stadium Authority. And I will tell you, not having to deal with RFRA requests in the future, to me, is the single best thing that has ever happened during my time as chairman. Those, just everybody, you know, why are we paying for this? Why are we paying for that? And because it's part of the legislation, and it's part of the agreement. We look at that very carefully. It is looked at by accountants before it's presented to us. And again, I've said this before, this industry is lucky to have Mike Hopkins as the executive director, because no chairman, no commission member would be able to do their job without his help and without his institutional knowledge. He's been spectacular. After the Racing and Community Development Act, I think safety and welfare was at the top of our list. We dealt constantly with track surface issues, particularly at Laurel. We brought in the new track superintendent, Chris, who's been awesome. We've had, Frank, I can't tell you how many meetings, but we've had at Laurel on safety and welfare, dealing with track surface, dealing with concussion protocols. Dr. Ryan's been out in front of that. Taking care of our jockeys, taking care of our equine athletes, hiring Libby Daniel, full-time vet, that was huge. The extension of the 10-year agreement, without question, the very volatile issue, but final positive result with the MTHA and Stronach reaching that agreement. For two-year-old racing and modifying the statute so it could be done without LASIX. Timonium continues to impress. I've said this to you before. I love Timonium. I love going there. You go there in August, and if there is nothing, you want to talk about a return to Americana, the big T is where it's happening. I mean, it is just so much fun. And then the focus on scholarships that we have emphasized. And again, Andy Cashman, and Gary Brewster, all of those folks have great responsibility and involvement in that. Jim Steele, Cricket Goodall with the Maryland Breeders, Mike Harrison, Willie White before Mike, all of them have been just tremendous, tremendous partners in this endeavor to move to continue to move Maryland racing forward. So I look back and I'm proud. I think we accomplished a lot. We took some incoming along the way, but that's my Vietnam veteran speaking, but we came out of the foxhole continuing to move forward. So I'm very happy with that.
Where do we stand now? You mentioned the Racing and Community Development Act. The other things you talked about are, you know, like the LASIX deal, for example, in some sense is done. I mean, the deal is done, and now we're just implementing the racing. The Racing and Community Development Act, that actually, now that the legislation is passed, now the actual work has to get done. What can you tell us about where that all stands?
Well, you know, we had a battle getting there, and we're going to continue to have a battle finishing it. I'm not any of the committees that are currently meeting, thank goodness. I haven't been asked, and I'll leave that to people much more knowledgeable than me. But it's my understanding that it is in the very capable hands of the Maryland Stadium Authority. Tom Kelso, as you know, runs that group, but they have outstanding people. They are now going through some of the nitty gritty in terms of track surfaces, in terms of where the backstretch is going to be at Laurel, repositioning Pimlico. There's so much minutia to deal with, not the least of which is, I think deciding what company is, and I understand there's been numerous companies put in for the bid to be the lead in this. Populous, of course, was previously involved, and I think there were just one bid. There's multiple bids involved. That has to get done. But the feedback that I get is that you have some phenomenal, knowledgeable people at the Stadium Authority. And that there are committees that are meeting on a regular basis, going through these issues one item at a time. And again, I'm not privy to a whole lot. And if I were, I'd certainly tell you to the extent I could. That's about all I've got on that. I think Mike Hopkins meets the various times with different members of that committee. I think Anthony Magnanaro is involved. I know Alan Rifkin has been involved to some extent. So it's moving ahead. But everybody knew that just when the bill passed, that was just the beginning, and we have a lot more work ahead of us.
Yes, there is a long way to go. You mentioned being the chairman during a Triple Crown. I think you were also out there, a couple of weeks ago for the Preakness. Talk about that experience. You've sort of seen the full range of Preaknesses at this point.
I have done everything on Preakness Day. I have been over, in the chalet. I never got into the Under Armour tent. I understand Mayor O'Malley was shut out from that too, but that was gone by the time I became chairman. So Kevin Plank shut us out, but that's okay. And then last year I spent, as you know, I was up in the press box with you. I was up with the stewards, and then I was in line with the other 300 people trying to use the bathroom last year. So we had that experience. Hopefully the water mains will be the first thing that will be attended to.
Yeah, that would be good.
But that was, that was just, Diplo flying in and landing in the middle of the infield. Planes flying overhead and save Pimlico. Last year was a classic. Last year was a classic. and then of course the battle between the Stronics, it was just I won't use the term since this is a podcast, but it was crazy. There's other words I could use. I won't do that.
you could use them if you really want to.
And then this year, we drive in, and I was a little bit hesitant, because you know, I'm old and I am compromised. I hate it when people say, you know, even about the president, obese. That's just not a nice word, but I have a feeling I fit that category. So I'm old. I'm a little heavier than I should be. I'm missing part of my lung from Agent Orange cancer. So I was like, nah, I'm not really so too sure about this. But you know what? It was socially distant. There were a limited number of people. There were masks. And you were there. What a spectacular day. I mean, it was just gorgeous. To see those races run and no crowd, silence. I mean, there were some people cheering, obviously. It was just strange. It was surreal. But it was a beautiful day. I mean, it really was. And the enthusiasm as to, you know, whether Baffert's horse was going to win and, you know, how that was going to all play out. It was, you know, obviously I think folks were hoping Tis the Law would have won and the Derby to make us, you know, the possibility of the Triple Crown that garners great excitement, obviously. But I will tell you, it will be one of those sports events that I will always, always remember for it being, my last one as chairman, and it was unusual, but I'm really happy I went because it's one of those, you know, they're going to look back and say, where were you in 2020 when the Preakness was run?
I think that's right exactly there. Right. You know, yeah. I have thought about this and I've written about it a little bit on the racingbiz.com. You know, in years from now, no one will remember that War of Will won the 2019 Preakness, but everyone will remember this year's Preakness.
They sure will. I also saw the governor there. It was an opportunity for me to thank him for honoring me by giving me the opportunity to be a part of this. Because it is. It's a real honor to be part of the racing industry and meet fine people like yourself. That's been a real gift. So,
well, thank you. Now, you mentioned the governor. I am curious your thoughts on this. You know, I had mentioned at the top of the show that you were sort of an out of left field choice. You know, not an industry insider, not involved in the industry, not really known to the industry in general. And your successor as chairman is Emmett Davitt, who is a little bit more known now because he's been on the commission for a year. But other than that, it's not really a known quantity to the industry either. And it seems like Governor Hogan there may be a point here to choosing successive sort of outsiders to be the chairman of the commission. I'm curious as to what you think about
that. I'm going to say this because I'm on the other end of this, and I don't have to say it, and it's not because that he picked me, but it's the fashion in which he went about this. I candidly think it's brilliant because just as I mentioned before about all the infighting between the various groups, and if you pick somebody to be chairman of the commission that is from one of those groups, then you're going to have that built-in problem. Oh, well, they're getting this because he's a member of the MTHA. They're getting this. He's going to focus on the standardbreds, and that's not fair because he's from the standardbred side. So I will tell you in conversations with the governor, he knows the industry, and he's very close to many people in the industry, and he knows the lay of the land. And his decision was based upon the fact that I don't want that. I don't want infighting. I want to pick somebody that has, and in my case, he said, has run a courtroom, who's run a meeting, who's going to have a battle with Alan Rifkin and not shriek, you know, run the other direction. Got it. And boy, am I ready to close that out. That's what he wanted. So let me tell you, when he picked Emmett Davitt to fill the other, I was like, I immediately said, oh, this man's got a plan. This man's got a plan. Because what is Emmett Davitt? I was a judge in the law and had the opportunity to run, obviously, a courtroom and meetings and a teacher background. Emmett was a state prosecutor and handled some incredibly high-profile political cases. And so if it's there's a crisis, he knows how to sit down and work his way through it. And I will tell you, having worked with him, particularly when we went, when, you know, I'm not sure how many times during your tenure the Racing Commission has gone into closed session. But we did that this year because we wanted to get legal advice, and we saw a potential crisis ahead. And Emmett was great counsel. He was great to have in there, someone that has a very, very bright, very calm. And so you don't have to be an expert in the horse industry to figure out what some of these issues are. And if I need counsel from the horse industry, I've got some of the finest members of this commission, you know, and Mike Hopkins. I got Bowman. I got Wason. I got Hayden. I've got Tammy Lafferty. I got Clarissa Coughlin. I got Tom Weinbrenner. And then, of course, there's Ernie Greco that will kick in the union side. You know, it's a great, great group of people to work with. And so if I have a question, because I don't know the answer, I turn to Hayden and Bowman and Wason on the thoroughbred side. Or on the standardbred side, I turn to Clarissa or Tom Weinbrenner or to Tammy. And so I think that was the governor's strategy, was to – he wanted somebody that at least had the background and experience to kind of keep control over what – could get out of control very easily with some of these strong personalities.
What do you see as going forward? What do you see as the main kind of challenges to the industry?
Oh, we have a lot of challenges. I want to phrase this. Clearly, number one is continuing to take advantage of that great opportunity when that bill was passed last year. We have to make that come to fruition. And the Preakness, the first Preakness that is run at Pimlico, is going to be. I can't wait. I really can't. I just think it's going to be an exciting day. And you bring the communities together. I think that it is a great opportunity for the city of Baltimore to start moving forward again, and it'd be great for the racing industry to be a part of that. So that's one exciting thing, but it's a challenge. The Federal Racing and Integrity Act. I'm a little perplexed at that one. I think we've done a great job in Maryland of addressing the issues that need to be addressed in integrity. Is it perfect? No. Are there things that need to be addressed? You and I have talked about that separately, and I don't want to delve into that too much. And we need to make certain that this industry continues to be what it has been historically. But if anybody's going to come in and try to abuse it or to use it to advance their own selves, their own personal interest, we don't need you. We don't want you. So I'm proud of what we've accomplished in Maryland. When we talk about the federal legislation, I'm sorry. It's Mitch McConnell. It's Kentucky. It's Churchill Downs. You see how things are happening in Washington? I'm scratching my head. I could point to something positive that has come out of Washington recently, and I can't think of anything. So the fact of turning that over to a national agency run by the federal government concerns me. At the same time, notwithstanding the fact that I think we're doing a great job in Maryland, there are other states, maybe not so much. And that embarrassment in New York, the federal indictment, that's a warning bell That's a call to action. We're not going to tolerate. Does it happen in Maryland? Of course it does. Well, nobody's stupid. We recognize that there's always going to be somebody out there to trying to get a leg up. But we're watching. I can assure, we're watching. And if it's worth losing a license, if it's worth being tossed out of the state, bring it on. So that is something I think that's really important for us to continue to look at in terms of the integrity of the industry. I don't know if that's a question or not.
Well, the whole thing with the federal legislation is sort of interesting because it also goes to something else we were talking about a little bit earlier, which is infighting within the industry. You know, you've got some interests, the Jockey Club, Breeders' Cup, you know, the Kentucky, some of the Kentucky groups, the Stronach group, frankly, that have decided that there needs to be federal legislation. The horsemen's groups have mostly been opposed to that. It's sort of the classic thing that probably should, you know, ought to be worked out within the family, but that's not how this is playing out.
No, and I think, in all honesty, Frank, and I know that that Joe DeFrancis wrote an op-ed piece in The Sun this week. I don't know if you saw that. The Sun's printed more op-ed pieces on racing in the past 2 weeks than I've ever seen in my life. and the one editorial that was responding to a critical op-ed piece talks about that is the future of racing in Maryland is a good bet and laid out all the reasons why, and I couldn't agree more. But notwithstanding my reservation and hesitation about the national, the federal legislation, I have a feeling that's what's going to happen because of what you have just referenced, all the various entities. Would it be better to work it out in-house? Yep, it sure would be. But we haven't been able to do that yet. We haven't been able to do that up to this point in time. So I think that we're going to have to just live with that and work with it.
Talking with Michael Algio here on Off to the Races. And I did want to ask you, you know, the context in which all this stuff is taking place, in which all the things in Maryland are taking place, the national context is, you know, the wagering handle on racing is down like 50% in the last 15 years. The number of foals born each year is down from over 40,000 under 20,000. So we're in a national context that really is decidedly
unhealthy. Those statistics don't apply in Maryland, do they, Frank?
No, they're different in Maryland.
Yeah.
Although they're not entirely different in Maryland. I mean, it's, you know, we don't exist outside of that universe, let's say that. We may be on the better end of
some
of these.
No, I understand, but I know that the foals being down and the wagering being down, and I know I've seen those statistics nationally, but I was also very much aware that one of the positives in Maryland is that we're not exempt from that, but I think the number of foals in Maryland has actually been pretty impressive from the last time I looked. And the wagering, again, we're now, and you referenced 15 years, but I'm amazed that we are doing as well as we're doing coming through this pandemic. And clearly the casinos opening again has had a huge impact. Because that's where some of that money is going to come from. But anyhow, I just wanted to point. I don't know. I know the national statistics do not necessarily reflect the statistics in Maryland.
Yeah, I guess where I'm going with my question is, how do you see, you know, how do you see the interplay of the national environment and the local environment? And you know, given what's going on nationally, and it is obviously it's having some effect on Maryland as well, because, you know, for example, declining demand for foals affects all breeders at some level. How do you see that interplay? And you know, what do you do? What do you, as Maryland, what do you do to avoid kind of getting dragged down?
Yeah, and I wish I had an answer for that, for two reasons. One, it would I would come across like I really knew what I was talking about if I had a good answer. And I'm going to plead ignorance on that because one, I don't have a good answer, and two, I would need the acumen of people like Tom Bowman, David Hayden, and others that really would probably be better positioned to answer that question because they actually work in the industry. And I think they would be able to be better positioned to answer that. I'm going to be very candid with you. I don't know the answer to that. I just don't.
Fair enough. All right. So do I get points? I stumped the panel here. What's my question?
You keep on going. You'll probably continue to do that.
So this pandemic, what has that been like for you sort of chairing the commission through literally unprecedented times?
We've continued to do our job. I mean, I really was worried when everything shut down, as was everybody in all industries, but particularly because it's impacting us, the horse industry. And immediately phone calls started coming in, you know, we should be open, we're different, we should be allowed to run. And my cautionary tale there was that, listen, the governor's been very, very, I think, very good to the horse industry. He knows what he's doing. Let the man do his job in terms of handling this pandemic. And the last thing that he needs is for the horse industry to come in the back door begging to be treated differently than everybody else. And so that was the biggest issue up front because a lot of people were like, this is wrong. I need to make a living. I couldn't agree more. And everybody was in that position. So we continued to stay in touch with the governor's office. We continued to stay in touch with all the stakeholders. I tell you what, I give the Stronic Group great credit in being out in front on this, of putting together established protocols, particularly at Laurel, that set that up as, in essence, a bubble. And shut it down and made it pristine. You couldn't get in there. And I haven't been back to Laurel since the pandemic hit in March. I haven't been to Laurel. I talked about going to Laurel to bring some of the politicians in to see what we had done. You may have been on that phone call during the commission meeting, and they were like, no. Do not stay out of here. I was like, oh, sorry, I suggested that. Because they were that focused and determined to, you know, they wanted it to be able to be open again. So it got to that point where, and the governor never gave a thumbs up. It's just that we stayed in contact and we got word that he was not going to give a thumbs down when Laurel reopened without spectators. And so when that happened, I mean, that was a huge, huge, and again, Frank, I tell you, the amount of time that I was spending this job is, I had no idea. It's like a full-time job and a half. And I will tell you that, and I do, I care about the job. I want to do it right. I want to make the governor proud. I want to make the industry proud. And so there were a lot of sleepless nights. Let me tell you, there were a lot of sleepless nights. I mean, the meeting that we had where we announced that Laurel was going to reopen, we were in touch. The meeting started at 12:30. At 12:25, I communicated and said, if somebody's going to object to this, we better know now. Because we're going to forge ahead with this, and so that's kind of difficult. You have to kind of scope the lay of the land, see where everything lies, and you make a decision. And so that was a huge, huge day when Laurel reopened, because I think it gave people promise, hope that, you know, we're moving in the right direction. And of course, we continue to do that. When O Ocean Downs opened this summer. And again, I was a big fan of allowing a limited number of visitors on the apron at Ocean Downs because the casinos were open right next door. But that did not happen, and so we just had to accept that. And again, that's the governor's decision, and you have to live with it and hope that they have the best interest of the folks at heart. But I would have loved to have seen that reopen. And now, of course, you know, we have the limited number of people that were permitted at the Preakness. And now Laurel is have you been out there? So I guess it reopened to the public on Thursday. Is that right? Today?
Yeah. Correct? Yeah, I am not there today. I went out one day. It was closed to the general public, but I got to go out as press, and so I went out one day for that, and it was just weird, to be honest. But I am curious, actually. This raises a question, which is, you know, casinos, for example, have been able to be open and have the general public in for a couple of months now. Racetracks were not permitted to do that up until September 28th is when they were allowed to have a very limited number of people. Do you know what the governor's thought process was on saying no to racetracks, but yes to various other venues?
I don't. I can only speculate. And I think that he had a consistent policy across the board when it came to sports venues. And I think that applied to baseball and applied to football. I think he saw this as a sports venue that with spectators in attendance, and he was going to treat everybody equally. And I think that was kind of the rationale. I don't know that. I'm just guessing. But the bottom line is you know, that was his order, and we complied with it. So yeah,
not much you can do.
Not much. I know. Well, yeah, I know what you can do, and that's comply with the order.
Right. All right. That, I guess that probably about covers me here. Anything else you would like to say?
No. Listen, Frank. I just want to thank you because, in my term as chairman, you've been great. We've stayed in touch. You've asked some tough questions. Some I've been able to answer, some not so much. I'm very delighted that we've had this relationship. And I've been on your ESPN Off to the Races talk show before, and it's been fun. It's been a lot of fun. And I will tell you, I feel like a student. I feel like a student of the game. I may not have gotten an A, but I think I passed the course, and I'm looking forward to the next higher level, part of class in the racing industry. So I'm excited to continue to be a part of it, and we'll stay in touch.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate the kind words, and I appreciate your taking some time to visit with me here on Off to the Races. It's a tough game to learn, man. There's a lot of, as you said at the beginning, there's a lot of moving parts.
There's no, it's like the Nike commercial. There's no finish line. There's no finish line, but I am a candidate for Beyond the Wire. I'll tell you that right now. Yeah.
That's it. We'll put you out to pasture. Michael Algio, thanks a lot for joining me here.
Frank, thank you so much. Good chatting with you. Bye-bye.
Same here. Welcome to Derby Bill Watson and Nick Hahn joining us for a little handicapping on Off to the Races. Derby Bill, how are you? I haven't talked to you in a couple of weeks.
Just recovering from the Triple Crown with a frown.
Why a frown?
Because I wasn't smart enough to pick the lady chased by 10 colts in the Preakness Crab cakes are expensive.
Well, crab cakes are expensive, especially the good ones. What about you, Nick? Did you have the lady in the Preakness?
No, I did not, but she certainly impressed me. You can say what you want about track variant and speed ratings and stuff. That lady had a lot of heart. I'm really impressed with what she did. That was really something special. One for the ages.
Yeah, no, that was a Preakness for the ages for sure. It's a great horse race and terrific effort by Swiss Skydiver to win the race. Let's turn our attention to the cross country pick five featuring Keeneland and Belmont today or Saturday. It's the Keeneland 7th, 8th, and 9th races and Belmont's 9th and 10th. That includes their two stakes, the Floral Park at Belmont and the Grade 2 Raven Run at Keeneland. So let's start here. The 7th race from Keeneland, the first leg of the cross country pick 5, is a maiden race, maiden special weight for 2-year-old fillies, and man, there are some nice horses, you know, well-bred horses, let's say, in this group of fillies. Nick, let's start with you here. How are you seeing this race?
Well, with 2-year-olds, generally you like to get a little bit of a start underneath them just to kind of have them go through the cycle. I'm kind of thinking here. That's who I'm thinking, is number 11. That's Graham Motion's horse. You know, ran on the turf at Kentucky Downs, kind of maybe figured something out a little bit later in the race, got out finished. But this horse is sired by Nyquist. Even though the horse is a little bit, you know, the other thing, it's not that much of a deal, but maybe you saw a little bit of this in the Triple Crown where the late foals, you know, become a factor, especially with 2-year-olds. But I'm going to look past all that. I just kind of like Tyler Gaffleone getting on board this horse for Motion. And I think this horse will really improve coming into maybe a more conventional racing purpose, coming from Kentucky Downs and having a start underneath her.
And Graham's horses typically improve second time out. A lot of times they're not quite tight the first time out and then take a step forward in the second. What about you, Bill? I think you landed in a slightly different place.
Yeah, so usually 2-year-old filly races crapshoot with 6 horses out of the dozen haven't run yet. So it's usually you like to go with a horse with experience in a race like this, but my tune was a little bit different here. I like a Willful Woman here with Santana up. Stephen Asmussen's obviously 9,000 wins and Nyquist. I go to the breeding with the 2-year-olds, obviously. I didn't with Swiss Skydiver. This is a 2-year-old filly race heading towards the Triple Crown next year. Hopefully one or two of these will come out and head on that path. And this might be one with the well-bred from Nyquist and Foxy Dancer and a Willful Woman is what every man wants in life. So I sort of like that name. Miss Dial here, Tom Amos has 2 in this race. He's entered 2. Miss Dial out of Dialed In. Once again, the breeding here and the workouts is about all you can go in on these first-time starters. So the 6-to-1 odds on both of them, Willful Woman and Miss Diva, and then Wicked Bistro, the 10, you head down towards Nick Country here. Wicked Bistro is Amos's other horse, and Thinking is the one Nick had on top. Should be the favorite out of one race. It has one race of experience, and that's Graham Motion. Should go off the favorite here, but there's nobody under. Nobody should go off under $10 in this race, so it's a kind of a tricky one to start your pick 5, so you need a little bit of coverage.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably right. You're not going to want to get caught short in this race. There might be another spot or two where you can tighten up your ticket a little bit, but this is a wide-open affair. At least it is until we see them run. So, all right, so 11-10-2 for Nick, 4-5-10 for Bill in the first leg of the pick 5. Leg 2 is the Floral Park. That's race 9 from Belmont Park. 6 furlongs on the inner turf, and oh boy, what's the turf going to be like? That's going to be a question that we won't know the answer to until Saturday, but it's been fairly soggy in Maryland, and they've been off the turf, and it may be a little raggedy up in New York. Bill, why don't you lead us off here on the Floral Park?
Yes, obviously, like sentimental pick would be lead guitar in this race for Eddie Van Halen, and you know, a tribute to him with George Reaver's lead guitar here, and it is a very fine filly here on the turf. You know, about six for nine in the money finishes here, and should get some odds. Won't be the favorite here. Lead guitar is the 8 horse. I got him behind Mitchell Road on top. The William Mott's horse here might go off as a favorite, and I'd say would go off as a favorite. Another wide open race here for pick five. They like throwing some doozies in here, and it usually pays a ton. That's why I wanted to, the cross country thing is usually popular with degenerates. Mitchell Road here, William Mott comes out of the grade three, second place, and he won a $50,000 race at Ellis Park. So he has plenty of experience. Rose Flower here is Christopher Clement, and we all know he's about the hottest thing on turf at Saratoga, and he's hoping to continue that at up at the Belmont. And William Mott, I mean, his horse here would be the 9 horse. Rose Flower here, Joel Rosario getting the mount. Had a really bad outing last trip here, and hopefully the rebound for Christopher Clement at I believe he's 6-1. So you got 3-1, 6-1, and 7-2. Lead guitar would not be a bad one for Eddie Van Halen.
I like the hunch play angle. I think actually Nick has a hunch play of his own in this race, I believe, although he also lands on Mitchell Road. Am I right, Nick?
That's right. Mitchell Road hadn't really raced, and you mentioned the turf from the onset. This was a situation where he goes to Ellis Park, this mare, and runs real poorly. Has always been in good company all the way through his career. I mean, this is a horse that's been in graded stakes races and finished second in a grade three in her last start. But the hadn't been on the turf, on a soft turf, yielding turf, off turf in such a long time, and maybe just needed a race to kind of figure out how to run on that surface once again. Sired by English Channel, which brings a little bit of sentibility into it. This horse is owned by the widow of Jerry Shields and bred by Jerry Shields, which brought Country House into the Kentucky Derby winner's circle back in 2019 on the dirt, of course. But just kind of a situation here with Mitchell Road, where she back in that race at Kentucky Downs, and even, you know, this is a situation we talked about in the first leg, just getting a start at Kentucky Downs or anywhere was good. I think here, just improving with the jockey change with Luis Saez may have helped that situation too. Gets another rider today with Junior Alvarado, but has always seemed to run well no matter who was riding for her. Experience will be a factor here, so I like Mitchell Road here. Also like Zantique, the Into Mischief, a 4-year-old filly. Not as classy as Mitchell Road, but with Javier Castellano, seems to be a real hard performer. I kind of like the 6-5 here. Sentimentally, I'll probably pick up 2 here with my Sassy Sarah. So we'll go 6-5-2 at Belmont Park.
One thing nobody talked about here, but one thing I kind of like about Zantique in this spot is she is proven is probably too much of a word, but she does have that start going 5.5, 2 back, where she won pretty nicely up at Saratoga. So she's got that kind of speed. Mitchell Road is a horse who's done pretty much all of her running, certainly everything on the page, in middle distances, 7.5 to a mile and 16th, mile and an eighth. So she's going to have to she's usually forwardly placed, but she's going to have her running shoes on a little bit if she wants to go with horses like Xanthique, who's shown she can, you know, dish out those 22-second fractions. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. For that reason, I would, me personally, I'd probably try to beat Mitchell Road on top and, you know, keep her in the pick, in the pick, pick five, but probably try to beat her on top with a horse that's a little bit proven as a sprinter. Moving to leg three, another turf race, this one back at Keeneland. It's the eighth race at Keeneland. It's a three other than allowance, $75,000 going a mile and an eighth on the green stuff. Bill, let's start with you. Where are you leaning in the third leg of the pick five?
Well, most people lean towards the two horse. Don't blame the Rocket, but he's just hasn't won in the last six races and will go off as a favorite, which is one you always like to try to beat. I'm going to use him, but obviously because I need Breeders' Cup piggy bank funds and a buildup. But so you don't want to throw out a horse that looks logically the winner here, but I'm going to hopefully have two behind him that come in with some big odds here. This is the one and narrowed down to three horses. Temple, if you're a Temple Owl fan, sentimental pick here. Temple Owl, if you're not, sentimental pick for Michael Maker. Just coming off of best and he's been pretty much 90 or above speed figures. It's a real steady about almost every race he races. And another one that needs a win, hasn't won for the sense of optional claimer down at Gulfstream, but very dangerous horse spot and spot here, I think, for this horse, Temple. And even worse, I've flipped a coin here in Appreciato, the 11 horse here, Michael Maker's combo here. I'm going to use Ricardo Santana up, another one that's had a stinger in the past when he ran in a grade three, ran just a blistering race, and I'm hoping every other race does. Seems to do pretty well. He dropped down to a cheap level last race to as a prep for this one. The Skip Away Bloodline, I'm reaching really deep on that one. But got the favorite and two dogs here.
Well, you could get paid if Appreciato wins 12-1 morning line. What about you, Nick? I think you like the two a little bit here as well, but you're in different places beyond that.
Yeah, that's right. I like Don't Blah Me Rocket. I know it's Don't Blame Me Rocket, but I like the two here. It has a little bit of class. I generally like the favorite class, especially when you start looking at older courses here. Don't Blame Me Rocket with Tyler Gaffleone again is a horse that has seen a lot of good competition. Midnight Tea Time is right there with him. Even though he doesn't have as much of the class, always seems to, run about even. If you kind of go back through the pages here, you can see where, they've really kind of gone back and forth, back in the PPs a little bit. This is a race where I think you do want to spread out a little bit more in the pick five. And something that's always kind of worked for me a little bit, especially when you see the trainers, Chad Brown, one to look on the AE list will be Spirit Animal. Those Lemon Drop Kids going two turns on the turf. I don't know. I don't have a stat or anything, but just by observation and anecdotally seem to work well. So that's a horse to really kind of keep an eye on as well, that 14 horse if he gets in off the AE list.
Interesting thing I'll just point out, the regular rider for Don't Blame Rocket, the last seven starts has been Julian Leperoux. Leperoux jumped ship today. Don't Blame Rocket's the favorite. He's 2-1 on the morning line. Jumps ship and lands on the Ian Wilkes horse. Now, Wilkes is a guy he rides for a lot, but he lands on Counter Offer, the 5 horse, who's 15-1. Kind of an interesting move. He has ridden this horse once before on the page, but other people have ridden them as well. So kind of interesting to see Leprieux get off and get on a long shot here. What do you think about that, Bill?
Yeah, well, like I said before, don't blame it. Rocket is not coming in the money per gamblers in like one out of the last six races. So maybe Leperoux won with him last year, did real well down at the fairgrounds, but has not done well since on top. So maybe Norm Case has made the switch, or Tyler got the nod because Tyler's red hot. I mean, Tyler's coming off a red hot Kentucky meet. And that's all I can do without giving them a direct message and, you know, $10.
Fair enough. All right, let's head to the fourth leg here of this pick five. I just don't know what to do with any of that. So fourth leg is the 10th race from Belmont. It's it's an allowance optional claiming race for New York breds with a $59,000 purse, second level allowance. And Nick, why don't you lead us off here on the fourth leg?
Well, this is where another race, I think, where if you can spread here, if your budget allows it, this might be a place to do so. I looked at Jewel of Arabia with, you know, as Derby Bill mentioned, with Clement, you know, kind of coming in hot, especially at Saratoga. You know, this is a horse that, you know, maybe just draw a little bit of a line through his last start there. But I'm going to land, I'm going to try and get a little deep in one of these races here and go with JC Shooting Star. I don't know, maybe searching a little bit, but had that win at Saratoga and it gets reunited with Jose Ortiz here. This might be where, you know, Jose kind of gets a little bit more out of this horse, even though, you know, as nature old mare, you know, that it's not really what you like to bet in bigger races, but, you know, could be considered past prime. This will be the 58th start of her career. But I think that being reconnected with Ortiz here adds a lot, and it just might be enough. But I think this is one where you want to get horizontal as much as you can. Good Credence is another one to maybe throw in there as well. That steady performer here recently, and that's reflected in the morning line. So I like the 10 in order. I like 10, 6, 4, but I'm used a lot of boxes and spread them out in the pick five.
Bill, what about you?
Yeah, this one has ladies and fillies all over this race from age 8 to age 3. Very difficult seeing which one feels better each for the day here. JC Shooting Star, I think like Nick on this one here. David the Donker here. As Frank has mentioned, the jockey switch in the last race, this one also gets a jockey switch back to Jose Ortiz, who actually won with this horse three races back. And he jumps back aboard here, and at 6-1, I really like this one's upside here, getting back some money there that I have lost on this horse before. Good Credence, Good Credence. Obviously, my tribute to Credence Clearwater Revival as I continue my rock love fest for. Losing all these guys this year in the rock and roll world. Jimmy Creed here is the sire on the horse side of it. Just steady, 91s, 90, just top performer here on the dirt. And the one with the best thing about the one that me and Nick like, the JC Shooting Star 6-1 and gets back on the dirt. And I think he's better dirt performer than turf. So yeah, I'm going with just two here, the JC's Shooting Star and the Credence Clearwater Revival horse.
All right, and that gets us to the final leg. That's the Grade 2 Raven Run at Keeneland, Race 9, $200,000, 7/8 of a mile on the main track. And I think everybody lands in the same spot on this one. Bill, why don't you tell us where that is?
Yeah, this is when you're playing a 50-cent base ticket in a pick five, which is hard enough to hit one or two, but it also has a mandatory payoff, this wager, across country. So it's popular with the people it has to pay out. So the thing you want to narrow it down and get you a single horse here, this is the one most people will single here, Venetian Harbor, to cut the cost of their ticket here. Just two grade one races out of the Ashland and the test class. There's only one that I even looked at was the second one was four races here, but definitely coming out of a grade two and grade three class level. So, I mean, this one's the one I'm really going to rely on. I'm going to go deep in the first four and then single Venetian and hopefully have some long shots in the first four legs.
This one ran second to Gamine last time in the test, and there is no Gamine in this spot, which should be to her advantage. Nick, what say you?
Yeah, Gamine and Swiss Skydiver, who we started off the broadcast with back in the fantasy at Oaklawn Park back in May. Yeah, Venetian Harbor, as long as she's not running against Speech or Gamine or Swiss Skydiver, you know, seems to do okay. Wins by nine lengths, wins by nine lengths. Got bumped in the start in that Ashland race. I think just kind of an opportunity to step up here and get her first win since February out at Santa Anita. Just great placement here. A little bit stepping back out of the G1 to go after it here. Also kind of to mention in this race is Finite. This is a horse that is partially owned by Debbie Easter here in Virginia. Kind of on the comeback trail here, didn't run all that well at Kentucky Downs in her first race after the layoff. Too much to ask to beat Venetian Harbor in her second time back. But just maybe one to kind of watch as that horse makes the comeback here. And then you have Four Graces here, who's a steady performer, certainly the challenge in the race. But I agree with Bill. Single here and just, you know, hold your breath if you can get through the first four legs and hope that Venetian Harbor can bring it home. And I would just single, like Bill said. I mean, that's the way to play the pick five.
All right, gentlemen, good stuff there. So we'll have these pick five tickets that you both compiled. We'll have them on the racingbiz.com along with this podcast. So good stuff. I wish you both good luck in the pick five this Saturday, and we'll be talking next week. It'll be Maryland Million week, so we'll be talking some Maryland Million next time, fellas. Bill, thank you.
Yes, Maryland Million and the Bankroll Builders head towards the Breeders' Cup. That's what everybody's hoping.
That's exactly what everybody's hoping. Nick, thank you.
Hey, appreciate it, Maryland Million. You see what happens when Jim McKay gives it a little bit of a think. great series throughout the years.
All right, guys. Thanks very much. Great to have you on, and we'll be talking with you next week.
There you have it for Off to the Races Conversations for this week. We had Michael Algio in for the long conversation, and then Nick Hahn and Derby Bill Watson doing some handicapping. Thanks so much for tuning in. My name's Frank Vespi. We will be back next week to do this again. Next week we'll have Cricket Goodall, head of Maryland Million Limited and the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, as well as a handicapping extravaganza to celebrate Maryland Million Week next week. Hope you can join us then. Thanks again so much for joining us here, listening to Off to the Races Conversations, powered by the Racing Biz.